A Broad in Education is a podcast on a mission to discover roots through conscious conversations about EdPats. EdPats are educator expatriates working in institutions outside of their home countries. Now let's get into this episode. When it comes to this idea of living abroad, most people look at it as this euphoric adventure that's full of so many highs. But for people like us who actually live this lifestyle, we know that it comes with plenty of lows. Dear listeners, today is a low for me. And specifically because of the news that I just found out about a very, very dear friend of mine. In the Black American EdPat community in the UAE, many of us know my dear friend David Thornton. We know him in many capacities. I mean, for myself, I met him in his early days in 2014. We crossed paths at a lounge in Abu Dhabi, and I still don't remember how the conversation started, but what resulted was a deep, deep, deep friendship that was full of love and laughs and connection and love and love. See, it's this thing about love that's so intriguing because intimacy is not solely based on a physical connection. My connection with David was spiritual. Our conversations were about bettering our lives, bettering the lives of folks that aspire to live this idea of being abroad. It manifested in social gatherings where, you know, I might show up at his house and literally within hours, I would be introduced to other EdPats who I wasn't familiar with, but they knew David. You know, after a little knock-knock at the door, different folks walk in feeling absolutely welcomed and just take a seat. You know, when we think about administrators, folks talk about having this open door policy, right? David embodied it. The door was never locked. Anybody was welcome. Who I would describe as strangers walked in, took a seat, grabbed a drink, and just chilled. You know, they were strangers to me, but to him, they were just folks who were seeking community, and he was the center of it. Folks that I've met that know him, that respected him, they literally describe him as the mayor, the mayor of the Black American EdPat community in the UAE. It reminds me of one of my fondest memories that I have with him. He and his girlfriend decided to do a crab boil in his apartment. And the both of them were boiling seafood, potatoes, crab, corn, you know, everything that goes into a New Orleans boil. And he literally laid a garbage bag on top of the dining room table, poured out the bowl on top of it. And when I tell you, it was a good group of about six or seven of us sitting around this table, fingers in, no utensils, just hand grabbing. I mean, the food was good. The company was good. Even just thinking about the memory right now just literally warms my heart. Today, literally today, my dear friend David, I found out about your passing. And though so many people can say it, I appreciate the fact of being able to say that it was such an absolute pleasure to know you, to welcome you into my life, to have so many memories with you. Our conversations over shisha at Southern Sun with Putu and Dede, our beautiful conversations on your white leather couch in Alreem Island, and even our trip to the Philippines and Jordan and exploring all these beautiful countries together. This episode is for you. So the episode that I'm releasing was actually recorded in 2020. And at the time that I recorded it, he was more than willing to share his story with the world. But kind of listening to my intuition at the time, I decided that it wasn't the right time. You know, he was still kind of deep and thick into this situation. And the story in itself is so complex. I mean, so many people hear these sound bites about, you know, what it means to live abroad, you know, what it means to engage in this. But until you've actually connected with someone that's experienced it, you just never know. David, he lived an interesting life because, to kind of make his long story short, he dealt with the judicial system in a way that, inshallah, never, 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 never should anybody else have to. But nevertheless, I had the opportunity to sit down with David and ask him to share his story about being locked up abroad and him being his amazing, bright, beautiful person. He shares this story with so much humor and joy and laughter, and I want to share it with you all. Not only for the things we need to be mindful of when it comes to living abroad, but specifically to give voice to his fight, his charisma, his ability to be his entire self, even in the midst of the trials and tribulations. He decided to live with a capital L. My dear David, may your legacy live on. And for those of us who had the privilege of knowing you, may your story be one that surpasses boundaries and borders and teaches us something about living in our full, authentic selves. This is for you, David.
So here we are sitting on the balcony. So run me through the actual day. What you in the morning, you woke up, you started your day.
Man, I woke up, went to work as usual. I rode to work with a coworker because I was carpooling at the time. And so went to work, did the whole day, taught my classes, didn't think anything about it. And made it through the day. Kids were crazy as normal, you know. Finished the day. Oh, man, yes, it's 1:30. Get to go home. And I walk out, and I get in the vehicle with my coworker, and we are headed home. He's headed to drop me off because he lived on Ream Island as well. So he just passed by my house, dropped me off, and go to his house. And so as soon as we pulled out off of Lost Street, we hear the sirens behind us. Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. And so I look at him like,
that's
universal, yeah. Same in every country, every language. Whoop, whoop. So that was the Arabic version. Whoop, whoop. And so we pulled over. So I look at him. I'm like, man, what did you do? He said, I don't know, but can you get my paperwork out of the mailbox? Yeah, sure. So I'm playing on my phone, playing games, trying to figure out what he has done, what violation did he do when he pulled out on the street. And so a little CID officer comes up to the driver's side window. He spoke to a friend that was driving. And then I'm looking down at my phone. And then all of a sudden the guy said, Mr. David. I said, what?
This is
the police officer. The police officer knows my name. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm in the passenger side of another man's car. And this dude has found me inside another dude's car. He said, can you step out for a minute? I said, yeah, I guess.
LT.
Oh. Yeah, LT.
Mr. LT.
Can you step out for a minute? I said, yeah, sure. And, so come on back to the back car. And so he was in an unmarked vehicle. So I hop in, and my coworker, he followed us to the Caledonia police station. And I was like, man, I don't know what's going on. And so he got to talking to me and was like, he said, you had a payment due on your rental car. I was like, yeah. I told him I'm paying him next week. But yeah, that is true. He said, well, come to find out, they have filed a police case against you. What? I'm like, a police case against me? I'm paying them next week on the 27th. He says, yeah, it's probably nothing. We'll go ahead and talk to the folk, and then you'll be on your way home. All right, cool. I had all the cash in my wallet anyway. I said, well, I got all the cash right now. They can come pick it up. Just call them, tell them to come pick it up, and we can drop this case and go about our business. He said, oh, you have it now? I said, yeah. And he said, okay, cool. Well, you just go wait in this holding room. So before we went to the holding room, though, they brought me in this other room with the captain. And, of course, he didn't know English that well. So they put me on a computer with a translator. And so she was telling me about the case and how much I owed. I was like, yeah, I'm supposed to pay them next week. But
so the captain was a woman.
The captain was a guy, but the translator was a woman.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm talking to the lady translator via the computer. She sees me on camera. I'm able to converse back and forth with her on the computer. And she's translating the Arabic to him as well. And so I told her, I was like, well, yeah, I have all the money. She said, oh, you have the money? I said, yes, yeah, I do. She said, okay, no problem. And so they take me out of the room, take me upstairs where the holding cells are. And they put me in a room with the phone to make a phone call. And so then I went ahead and called all my frat brothers, let them know what the deal was and everything and what was happening. So they'll be aware. Somebody, at least someone, is aware where I am, you know. And so after about 2 hours or so, I'm asking, you know, have you guys called the company? And they were like, yeah, we called. They said they're on their way. Oh, cool. No problem. So they take me out of the holding room. They started processing me. I said, well, why are we doing all this?
Because right. I just said, I have the money.
I just said I have the money. So they assigned me a locker, take everything out of off my possession, phone and everything, put it inside the locker, and they walked me to the cell. And I sit down, they lock, close the doors, clink, clink. But, you know, I'm still at this point, you know, I'm not tripping. Because they're on the way. So this was about 2:30 that afternoon. And so time is going. It's now 5:00. Where are the people? Oh, they're coming. All right. 6:00. There's only one window in the cell. I'm in the cell with about 10 other guys. All in there for various reasons. And so I look up and notice the sun is disappearing out of the sky. It's getting dark, you know. So now I'm knowing that the rental car place, they close around 7, maybe 8 o'clock. It's getting darker. And so by this time, now I'm getting a little frustrated because I know it doesn't take 5 hours for them to come across town to collect this money. And so so I called the police guy back to the cell. I said, you guys said they were on the way. He said, oh. We called them, but nobody answered the phone. Mm. I said, wait a minute. You said you called them. They said they were on the way. But now you're the same guy. Now you're saying you call and no one's coming. Now, one of those isn't the truth. And then now he gets agitated. It's like, you calling me a liar? I said, I'm not calling you a liar, but I am pointing out a discrepancy in the story. Like, you just said they were coming, and now you're saying nobody answered the phone. So if they didn't answer the phone, they couldn't have told you that they were on the way. So now I'm a little confused. And so time is by this time I know I'm not getting out. And now I'm highly frustrated. And so now I begin to threaten them and like, I need you to call the embassy right now.
The American embassy.
I need you to call the United States embassy right now. And now he gets a little frantic. He says, but why? I said, because I'm here for 5-6 hours now. You guys said they were on, that the company was coming to pick up this money that's in my locker number 37. And now you're saying that no one answered the phone. So
now, LT, at this point, had you signed any paperwork? Had they brought anything to you?
I have not signed any paperwork. The only thing I signed was the little slip of paper that basically let them know what locker my belongings were in. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't signed anything, hadn't talked to really anybody but the police officers and the translators. And so now it's closed. The office rental car company is now closed. There's no way to get out of the jail. Now the case is moving forward. And so I'm there all night. Go in. Now it's dinner time. Now I'm really frustrated. I'm hungry. And they bring out this raggedy food, this day-old fish and rice. But when you're in jail, if you're going to stay alive, you got to eat the food.
So there was fish and what else? What was the food?
It was just fish and rice. Like they ordered from some biryani place.
So you even get delivery.
You get delivery in jail.
But it's not the Taliban.
It's not Taliban. I don't know. I think they had that delivered 2 days before.
It just was sitting in the back.
It was just sitting in the back, man. And they brought it out. And here we are eating dinner. And we go back in the cell. And so now I'm in here all night long. I'm wide awake on my little bunk with a blanket, no pillow. It's kind of chilly in there. And the other guys are they're in there for their various reasons. So they started wanting to converse with me.
But wait, LT, before you go to that, so give us a visual as far as like what the cell looked like.
Well, the cell it was a pretty nice cell because it had 10 beds in there.
And were they like bunk beds?
No, they weren't. Well, they probably could have been set up as bunk beds, but they weren't. They were all on the floor level, like five on one wall and five on the other wall. All metal, gray metal beds.
Oh, it reminds me of like a hospital room.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, like a psych ward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so all with gray blankets. Then you had of course, they had a big restroom there. They had showers in the restroom, but no soap. Toilets with no tissue.
Ham, no burger.
And so, man, you got it. Now the food is, is deadly to your body. So now my stomach is messed up. Now I got to go in here, try to use this restroom. And, man, there is no soap in this thing. And so you got to do your business, and it's a little bucket that they have right beside a faucet. Whereas that you fill it up with water, and you got to use that to clean yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. So, left hand to clean, right hand to eat. Mm.
That's the thing too, because here it's a culture where they use the bidet.
Yes.
At least the spray.
Correct.
There was no spray.
There was no sprayer, so it's just a little bucket and like a faucet. You fill up this bucket, and so you gotta really practice the Islamic way, because you don't have soap to clean yourself. So you can't use your right hand at all, because that's the hand you're gonna have to eat with for the time that you're in jail.
Mm.
So you're using this bucket. You go scoop up a little water with your left hand and try to go up in there and clean yourself out. And now your stomach is messed up, so your bowels aren't solid. Bowels aren't solid, so man, you in there, and then you're in the same clothes, and then you trying to air dry from that water you done just and splashed everywhere, and and you pull your clothes back up, and you just there.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that was Thursday night, and so I'm in there talking to a few of the guys. They're like, "Sir, you got to relax. We see that you're getting angry." I say, yeah, I am getting angry. I'm a little upset that I'm still in this jail cell. And I had my ticket to get out of the jail in locker number 37. And I can't get out. So there was this guy from, I think he was from Malaysia or the Philippines. And long hair, weird dude. He had a white hair bow in his hair.
No.
Yeah. And he kept asking me to come sit on the bed with him.
Oh, no.
I said, I'd have seen this before. He trying to get me.
Tonight.
Tonight. He trying to get me. He's like, come sit right here. I mean, you had it, that's how he talked. Come sit right here, like Michael Jackson. And so, of course, I didn't go. You're not finna take my manhood, too. Right. I'm already pissed off. I'm in jail. Now you finna try to come and get me. No, I'm good. In front of these other nine dudes. And so, of course, he's talking to me about why he's in jail. And he was a tattoo artist and illegally got set up by this 16-year-old girl out here who wanted a tattoo. Parents found out. He got busted. And so that was an interesting story there. Then this other guy, he was going nuts. Like, he could, because he wanted to smoke a cigarette. And they don't, here in the smaller jail, they don't give you a break to get out of jail. You're in there 24/7. Mm. Yeah, they may come by and check on you every 4 hours or so. So you just lock behind closed doors with you yourself and your imagination. And so he's pacing back and forth, upset, wanting to smoke, banging on the cell door. I want to smoke. Please help me. I want one smoke. And they wouldn't let him smoke. I was like, man, can you let this man go smoke?
Get this man a smoke.
I have doka and a lighter and pipe in my bag and locker 37. Let this man go smoke, because I don't need him to kill everybody in here with a cigarette. I want to actually live. Yeah, give this man some nicotine so he can calm down. They wouldn't do it. They would not let him out. And so he's really going ballistic. And so he was in jail because he went and to the hospital to see his mom, who had been ill. He was drinking. And the security recognized that he was intoxicated. So six of them decided to take it upon themselves to beat him up. He had a black eye. And for being publicly intoxicated, they don't play that here in the country. So they beat him up and called the police. And he was arrested and placed in the slammer with me. Yeah. And so his story was interesting as I just continued to stay awake and look at him. I didn't want to fall asleep. I was tired, but I couldn't fall asleep with him walking back and forth pacing.
And
white hair bow. Come
sit with me.
And so another guy, he is just sweating profusely. And every time the call to prayer happened, he's in the corner praying, which is fine. But he didn't speak any Arabic. I mean, he didn't speak any English, rather. And so I was asking some of the guys, you know, well, why is he in here? Well, apparently this guy was working out on one of the streets, was jogging. And so they called the police on him, thought he was going to jump off a bridge. And I don't know if he had just stopped and looked over the edge of the bridge, you know, taking a rest from his daily run. And they called the police on him. And they picked him up, took him to a psychiatric hospital for about a week, and then took him to jail. Mm. Yeah. So he's in the jail, and he's actually pretty normal. But after a while, I started to realize, oh, he is a little off. He's a little crazy. So I had to watch him too. So I'm all up in arms. I'm like, man, I'm in full jail mode, like I'm in America. Like, somebody try something. Yeah, I am finna beat up everybody in this cell. I am finna grab these beds. I'm finna tear the place up. I was ready. But actually, the guys were really cool. I mean, they just wanted to have a conversation with a black dude that was in jail. And so the night passes. Next day is Friday. In there again. All day Friday, nothing.
And Thursday, Friday, Saturday is the weekend.
Is the weekend
equivalent to the Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Correct. So I'm in there all night Thursday, I'm in there all day Friday night. Get up Friday morning. It's breakfast time. They brought us some Arabic bread or some jelly, and some Indian dosa or whatever it was.
Which is what, bread?
Dosa is the bread. There's some, there's some sauce. I'm not sure what the sauce was. I've seen it before, but I forgot the name of it. But that was what breakfast was, and some leaven, which is like sour buttermilk to me. It's gross.
Isn't it like yogurt?
It's like liquid yogurt. Mm. That's exactly what it tastes like. Mm. Or liquid sour cream. Mm. One of the two. It's horrible to drink, actually, in my opinion. But they love it. They drink it like it's, you know, Kool-Aid or something. Mm. And so we eat that for breakfast and go back to the sale. We're in there for a few more hours, and it's lunchtime. In there more hours. Now it's dinner time, and lights out. You know, go to bed. And so now I'm really frustrated. Now, so here comes Saturday, and it's court day Saturday. So everything is opening back up on Saturday, and just so happened, I get on the first bus to go to court, and so they put everybody in shackles. Due to my heart condition, my ankles had swollen up because I didn't have my meds on me. Mm. While I was in there, so for 2.5 days, I did not take my heart medication or my fluid pills, and so my ankles had swollen up to the point where they could not put the shackles on my ankles, so they had to put me in handcuffs. And so they put us all in the paddy wagon, and no seat belts, of course. And he's driving like crazy, so you slide back and forth in the paddy wagon going to the courthouse. And they march us all into the courthouse about 2:30 Saturday afternoon. And so we all sitting there. I did not see a judge until 7:30 that night.
Now, how are you keeping up with the time? You had a
watch? Well, I didn't have a watch, but once we got, I was able to ask the police officers what time it was, so they were able to tell me. Mm. And so, and then once we got to the courthouse, then you were sitting right beside a clock, so mm-hmm. you can see what time it was. So we sitting inside the courthouse for 5 hours before the judge saw me. And so sitting there waiting. The guy that got beat up by the security guards, he goes in right before me, and he comes out crying because the judge has given him another 7 days in jail. I was like, that is crazy. So he couldn't go home. And so, interesting enough, the courts were ran by the Sudanese. So all the judges I saw were guys from Africa. I'm like, what in the world? And so one of the prosecutors come out, Sudanese guy, said, "Where is the American?" "Where is the American?" I said, "That is I. Come. And I go in and sit down. And he says, "So you take rental car and not pay?" I said, "Sir, that's not really what the case was. I made a payment arrangement with the company to take care of it on the 27th. He says, "You take rental car and not pay?" The answer is yes. I said, "Yes, sir. That's exactly what happened. I took a rental car and I did not pay." He said, "Okay. You go home tonight." And so he gave me a slip of paper. He says, "You go back to jail. You give them 1,000 dirhams. You go home." Yeah. So I sit there and wait. I have to wait another hour or so for the last guy that was in the paddy wagon with us to go in and get his sentence. And so we get back on the paddy wagon. I get back to the courthouse. I'm ready to go. I get my things out of my locker. They decided to take the cuffs off of me, and the cuffs got stuck. Mm. And so one of them got stuck. So I couldn't get out of the handcuffs. So I sat there for another hour trying to get out of the handcuffs.
Oh, wow.
Trying to get out of the handcuffs. Paid the 1,000 dirhams. And my frat brother was outside waiting in the car. And so now I'm free. I'm smelling fresh air. I get in the car with my frat brother. He's driving, talking to me. Excuse me. And he said, "Brother, I don't mean to offend you. He rolls down the window, says, but you stink. I said, well, yes, because I hadn't had a shower in 3 days, and I had to wipe poop with my left hand and eat with my right. So I got poop on the left hand and fish on the right hand.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I vowed that I would never go back to the through the judicial system here. It is not fun. And, yeah, that's how that concluded.
And see, I think this story is amazing because there are so many reasons in the States. First of all, you know, just being a black man in the States.
Right.
You're at risk for being put into the judicial system.
Correct.
But the reason that you ended up here was based on what? What happened that they were even looking for you?
They were looking for me because, simply because you didn't pay your bill. If you are in this country here, they are very strict on debt. So companies here can basically use the police as a weapon. And so if you're late on a payment, don't make some type of arrangement with them, then they can simply call the police, file a police case against you, and the police will come pick you up. And you will be locked up until you are able to get that debt cleared, which doesn't make sense to me because there's no way anyone can pay the debt unless you're out actually getting the money to do so. I can't pay it if I'm locked up in here, sir. I mean, I could have, and that was the case. You know, I had the money is in locker 37. Well, I can't pay them unless you get them here. So I get out of the jail. And I go and began to take care of the paperwork and then clearing the bill. So I go in, and I'm really upset at this company. And so I paid the money. I said, they called you guys to come pick up the money. What happened? Well, they said, well, sir, we showed up at the jail, but the police told us you were not even there.
Mm.
Yeah. Sure did. So the police had lied to the company, and I don't know, for whatever reason, they may have wanted that 1,000 dirhams, you know, you know, for their pockets, you know. And so, but sure enough, so they came to drop the case, and the police said I was not there in that jail. But the police at the same time were telling me, oh, we called them, they said they're on the way, or we called and they're no one is answering the phone.
Mm.
And so, for why they did that, I'm not sure. I have my speculations, but it's only a speculation. But either way, it was a very bad situation. And so, but needless to say, went to pay the bill to clear it, but you couldn't. You weren't allowed to do it that way. You have to go to court and make the payment in front of the judge in order to get the case dropped. And so I met up with the managers with Eurostar. They met me in court. Judge calls me up. They have my case filed there. I'm standing there before the judge. Payment has been made. The Eurostar folks translate and say they're dropping the case. And so the case was dropped, but I still wasn't free. I had to come back a week later in order to get my sentence. And so... I arrived back at court again the next week, and then they found me not guilty and stamped my paperwork, and now I was able to go. Yeah, yes. It's been an interesting time, and you know, you learn a lot in the process and just adds to your repertoire of experiences in life. Just talking points, you know, when having conversation with people. You know, building relationships a lot of times is, become better when you actually have something to talk about.
Right. It's more of a blueprint of right. When you get here,
right.
Don't do this.
Don't do this. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't you do that? I went through it. You
right.
Know? You know,
I didn't read about this one.
I didn't read. You're right. 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 This actually will happen.
Thank you so much, LT.
Thank you.
This podcast is produced by Dr. Tiffany Lachelle Smith. Be sure to follow Abroad in Education on IG and Twitter, and subscribe to my newsletter at abroadineducation.com.